So here we are. Hello, everybody. Great show as usual, Vin. Thank you so much. Good midnight, Ireland, and hello, Australia and America. I have here today with me my friend Sarah Gunn, who has I've known since school. We were in the debating team, but I think she ran away. And anyway, she ended up building her mother, and she actually ended up building a house in Daylesford, which out of stone, this massive house with a turret, and people called it the castle. Well, it never really quite got finished. So Sarah decided to, well, I don't know what you decided to do, but did you really, Sarah? Everybody, I'd like you to meet Sarah. Sarah
Hello.
Gunn.
Hello. Yes,
How?
the
Yeah.
castle. why did I write a book? Because I had to learn how to build a castle.
That's
So
right.
I knew all the stuff, and there wasn't just one book I got it from. Anyway, carry on, carry on. What else were you going to say?
Well, I was just gonna sort of say hello. How are you?
I'm good. And how are you?
Oh,
All the
good.
way over in Ireland.
Yes, it's good. Yes, I'm Irish now, so. I once dreamt that they moved my house. Once when I was moving house, you know how I've got a mud brick house. I once had a dream that my two-story mud brick house was on the back of a truck. And I knew that I was moving somewhere. So that, anyway, sounds a bit ridiculous, doesn't it? So,
Oh, well, no,
anyway.
it doesn't at all. I had a dream one time that someone had driven a ute right through the middle of the castle, and it was like in ruins and being vandalized everywhere. And I had someone who was supposed to be keeping an eye on it. And I woke up in the morning and I rang up early, and I don't normally get an early start, but luckily this person, who I won't name on the phone because, people might know her, she said, "Yes, well, actually, there have been people there, and I took everything out the back just to get rid of these people who'd been squatting, and I burnt it." So she burnt a lot of our old furniture as well, and I felt it in a dream.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And so she got rid of your she got rid of the squatter by burning their furniture.
Well,
And yours as
yes,
well.
well, they're personal possessions. And
I know, you had a lot of trouble with
you have to
squatting.
bring it back to a building site every once in a while by getting rid of the rubbish.
Oh God. Well, anyway, that castle never got finished, did it? I mean, like I haven't been there for only about a year or so, but
No, it's
so.
waiting for me to be there full time, I think. And maybe next year.
I thought you were going to get Phoebe to finish it, but she doesn't want the responsibility.
You can't make people do anything. You
No,
should
I
know
sort of
that.
discovered that. Yeah, I sort of discovered that along the way. Oh God. So anyway, Sarah's mother decided to build this castle. Let's start with the beginning of the castle, because I've told people that you're going to be talking about we're going to be talking about your first book, which you got printed by the CSIRO, on how to build a castle, and I on how to build a stone house.
Yes,
And
it's actually
so
called
basically,
Stonehouse Construction. That was their idea. It's a very dry title.
yeah. And so I was looking through PDFs and some information on it last night, and God, there's a heck of a lot you have to know about. I mean, the selection of the different type of rock is fascinating.
Yes, that's why there has to be one for what area that you're in, so you know what you're dealing with. I mean, a
So,
book for England can only go so far. You have to have a book that tells you about Australia.
yeah, that's right. So, I wish you were more talkative, Sarah, because
Oh, you want me to
I
carry
want you to,
on?
yes,
Well,
please talk over me.
I actually found that chapter one of the book was accessible on the internet, which isn't very good, is
Yeah.
it? But it's more about design, which is important. And it doesn't really matter where you are, good design, except that in the northern hemisphere, south is north and north is south from the point of view of which way your windows are facing. So,
Yeah.
as far as I'm concerned, that should be free information to everybody anyway.
Yeah.
And the thing about a book and pictures and stuff is that you can't put it all on the internet or you don't make any money.
Yeah, that's
And
right. And Yeah, and Sarah is actually an architect, and an architect who doesn't practice architecture because you reckon you didn't keep up with the computer stuff.
Oh, look,
But Sarah,
I've gone back and learned a lot of that, but it's very much a who you know thing and a boys' club thing. I went to a reunion at the back of Parliament House because Ted Baillieu was one of the hosts, and because he's in the Victorian Parliament. And so he did a tour at the end of the lunch through Parliament House, but I was talking to someone just beforehand, and the person I was talking to said that he was off to the Melbourne Club with a few people. He'd been invited to go down there instead afterwards. And of course, that's not the kind of place where I can go because I'm female. And unfortunately, the whole profession's a bit that way. So, you know, you can build houses, you can do lots of stuff, but when it comes to the boys' club, well, no, you're still not in. So, well, you know, that's how it is. And it's construction is very male profession or business. You know, you walk past a building site, very, very rare to see a woman with a hard hat on, and quite often she's actually just on a visit. You
Yeah,
know, with
that's true.
whatever consulting group, if you do
Oh,
see
sorry,
her.
and you didn't somebody ring you up and do a phone survey on you and say, do you have a handicap?
Yes, that's right. Yes. And I said, yes, well, I'm a woman. And because she was a woman too, we had a good laugh. Yes. So anyway, you don't make as much money writing a book as you do doing more constructive work because it takes a long time for it to dribble in. But anyway, so I've had the book that I'd done the research on, and when there was nothing else, well, so I sent off letters to publishers, and then I had to spend another year or two getting it fined up. And then there was this other book that I didn't send to the publishers because it needed a lot more work, but it's actually really more important, which is about Australian timber. So what do you want to know about Australian timber?
Oh, okay, good segue. So anybody who wants to listen to this show on how to build a stone house, don't do that because Sarah Gunn doesn't want to talk about that because
Well,
she's more interested in her new book.
yes, I mean, building with stone, you know, you have to remember to use your knees and not your back when you're lifting stones. And once you've done that, then yeah, there's a couple of other tips, but I mean, when you write a book, you forget it all and then you move on, you know? People read the book
That's right.
and they talk to you about one thing or another, and you think, oh, yes, they're telling me about something that I knew once, and now they're telling me. It's great.
That's right. So basically, you can use any stone, can't you? Any local stone to build your house?
It seems ridiculous talking to a show in Ireland. I mean, they've got so many stone buildings there. They've probably got a lot more to choose from as far as going out and looking at what people have done. Yes, you can use any stone, but you'll get walls up bigger, better, quicker if you have larger stones. So you basically start the wall each day when you're working with the larger stones you can lift, and then fill in the smaller ones that fit until you reach level, and you don't go up too fast in any one day because you don't want the weight of the stones to be making the mortar ooze out from the cracks too much. There you are. That's it in a nutshell, and I wrote a whole book.
And it's a fabulous book with lots of wonderful photographs of you when you first started it. How old were you when your mother first started that house?
Oh, I don't know. No, you don't talk about age. That's rude. Come on.
Okay, well,
I
we
was
can't be
young.
rude. So she was very young and very beautiful. And there's a great photograph of her. And you
Yes.
buy the book just to see the photograph of Sarah when she
I
was young and
did get a
beautiful.
photo of my mother in, which she hated to be photographed. So I thought I did well there. Yes, with an
You did
arts
well, and you
window.
got, oh, and you got Harry in there too.
Yes, the old bloke she roped in. He was amazing. Yeah,
Harry
he was
built
a
most of the house,
Dutchman.
really, didn't he?
He was a Dutchman who'd come to Australia at the end of the war, and he had worked in Western Australia in farms and had just managed to be a bit of a handy sort of a bushman over the years. And he was the perfect person. He'd worked on swimming pools in Melbourne. That's where my mother met him, when she wanted to put a swimming pool out in the backyard and he was doing the tiling. And then, yeah, she talked him into leaving Melbourne and moving to the bush and building stone walls. And he was happy enough doing that. He didn't really like to be going off into town and doing things much. Kept to the bush and enjoyed it. And there was a little bird that used to sing nearby while he was working. And Harry used to say, "That bird is always telling me, give it up, give it up, give it up." He said that I'm just going to carry on. I'm just ignore that bird. It's a tease.
Here you are. Oh, goodness. All right. Well, anybody who wanted to know anything about how to build a stone house, I think you may as well tune out now, because I think we're going to talk about other things.
We can talk about butter boxes. Do you want to talk about butter boxes?
Yeah, let's talk about butter boxes.
So when the English and whatever other colonials came to Australia, they were in a hurry to clear land so that they could grow sheep and cows and send produce back for export dollars to the mother country. Mm-hmm. So they were ripping down the forest as hard as they could go, especially if the timber was really soft. So some of the softest timbers turned out also to be the ones that were suitable for packing the butter once they had a production of butter enough to export some.
Yeah.
And for a while they were still bringing timber from Europe, and until World War One, they were probably bringing quite a lot of pine from the Baltic. I'm not sure if it was all pine, but I think most of the butter box packing was in pine or maybe birch. I'm not sure what it was before World War One, because you don't read that so much. It's not on the internet. All these latest things are, you know, different. But I did find a little bit on the internet about during World War One, when they had submarines, the English had submarines in the Baltic Sea, and the ships were not getting out. Already the Germans didn't want to send timber to England, so there was a shortage. And the Germans wanted supplies of metal and so on from the Baltic. And back then, the submarine people didn't like to bomb if it wasn't the army, whatever. I mean, maybe it's still the same. You hear about enough civilians getting shot down. But anyway, so the submarines, they would give the merchant ships a warning. "We are going to sink your ship," and give them time to get off before they'd sink the ship with the metal in it, the supplies. So I thought that was very nice. Yeah, that's a bit of a change. I mean, you know, what with drones and so on nowadays, nobody does that.
The submarine people. I love the way you call them, the submarine people.
It would have been the Navy. Yes, the Navy. I do know about the Navy. But anyway, no, it's because it does sound, make them sound much more personal when you read a story like that. Mm. So anyway, the wood wasn't coming over to the Antipodes from there. And in New Zealand, they had this white pine. Now, white pine is also known as kahikatea. Have you heard of it?
I'll pretend,
It's pretty rare now. And so it's one of the podocarps, which is the one that we have a few in Australia, but there's a slightly different one. It's related to the very famous Huon pine from Tasmania, which you're bound to have heard of.
Mm. Yes? Oh, of course I've heard of it. We had a boat built out of it. It's a good material.
So the white pine wasn't so good for boats, but it was good for butter boxes. And in case anyone's botanical, that's Dacrycarpus dacryoides. And it also occurs, the Dacrycarpus, but not the same exact species, occurs in New Caledonia, which means that they are trees that got there through continental drift. And when they evolved into that, there were no trees surviving anywhere else that were quite like them. So New Zealand is a very mountainous island, and so is New Caledonia, and they're pretty much in line on the edge of the Pacific. So they both had that kind of tree, and it's soft, clear wood, but it doesn't survive very well in the weather or in the ground. So that was a bit what was being used for butter boxes. Now, I thought I was going to be doing research on the kauri, and then I find that the kauri, which also you may have heard of the kauri.
We had kauri pines. I told you we had some on our farm in Queensland.
So therefore, if you want to go and look in forests in New Zealand, they have saved some kauri forests. And they still have to work on saving them because there is a dieback that they have to make sure everyone washes their boots Go
Oh, what? Well, they're
on.
just they're just about they're the just the way their leaves are formed. They're one of the most primitive trees. They're almost like, the way their leaves are attached to the plant is a very primitive way of doing it. It's almost like a frond or a fern. Not,
Yeah,
yeah, it's
they're called a pine even though they have a leaf, which we would call a leaf rather than a needle. But they're called pine because they are not a flowering tree. They have a cone. And so the cowrie is agathis, and apparently that's from the Greek for a ball of thread, from the look of the cone. It's a very kind of rounded cone, and all of the bits that when they open up, they are separate, but when it's a tight cone, they just are so close together that they make like a line pattern, like a ball of thread. So yes, the Agathis australis was the New Zealand one, and it was very much sought after because, number one, back then they were cutting them all down with axes and those two-handled saws with a pick, and because it was soft, it was right up there with Australian red cedar as one of the most sought-after timbers, which is why I
Well,
thought I
this.
need to know about this.
Why did you need to know about this?
Well, because I'm working on a book about Australian timber, and these were the most popular back then.
I mean, okay. Yep.
So
I've
the
got you.
Australian cedar was the first wood they looked for when they arrived. Once they knew about it, the cedar getters would go off into the bush and find the cedar and just cut that and send it down the river with their initials carved on at the end or whatever. And a lot of it just went out to sea in floods and got completely wasted.
Well,
So.
there's a couple of things that you said that made me think about it when you said they came on the continental drift. Well, things didn't just come on the continental drift. I mean,
No,
yeah,
no.
like,
With the
well, hang
different
on a minute.
groups of trees, they all kind of, if you believe in evolution, then we can use the word they evolved. Otherwise, they developed, they became more popular, whatever. They had their genetic background developed in whatever region. So the pines in the northern hemisphere are different from the pines in the southern hemisphere. And the beech trees, the southern beech is different from the northern beech. And they have theories about where the first flowering plants grew, which apparently is the Proteaceae on the east coast of Australia. But yes, so I thought I was writing about timber and I get into this all this botanical and historical stuff. So,
And you're enjoying it. So, how do you write a book, Sarah?
I've just done this research into butterboxes and look, I'm wasting a lot of time because a lot of it won't go into the book. But because I feel like if you know about the subject, then you can know how to make it interesting. So
You
I will
can
just
know how
tell
to.
you about the butterboxes because I think they are interesting. So I went on the internet and I found some butterboxes for sale on eBay. And from that I could find out how much butter they had, 56 pounds, some were smaller, and how large they were in dimensions so I could work out how much timber they used. And then I could get an idea of just how much of the timber market was being grabbed by the butter manufacturers for export. And that's just export, because the local butter, probably they could reuse the boxes, but once they send it overseas, it's not coming back.
Let me ask
So,
you, who was this butter is coming from cows where? In
In Australia
England?
and New Zealand.
In
No,
Australia and
it's
New
been straight,
Zealand?
yes, because that's one of the reasons why the colonials was in such a hurry to cut down all the trees so they could have farms. Because farms brought in money from somewhere else. If they could send stuff back to England, they could bring in money. Especially wool, because wool would feed the industrial revolution in England, all the mills. That was worth something. And of course, butter would travel because, in the hold of a ship, it just stays pretty much at room temperature and that's all right.
Put a lot of salt in it.
Probably, yes.
No unsalted butter going across the waves. Yeah, God, I don't know what to say. Oh, the thing is, I'm listening to the chat box here too, and somebody's made a joke. He said, "Edge of the seat, stuff this," and So I can't read out what they're saying. They've gone naughty on me. They're not criticizing you. They're talking about wanting to talk about other silly things. Sorry,
Okay,
sir.
that's fine. Well, I'll tell you what I found out about the Butterboxes then.
Okay,
So
you have to. You just have to.
well, because I said okay. So I said, look, after you said, well, sorry guys, we're not talking about stone just now. We're talking about Butterboxes. I thought I should at least go on, because
I think
there
you
might be a
should.
few people
Yes.
ringing around saying, quickly, quickly, they're talking about Butterboxes,
Yes, I'm
as
sure.
people
Well,
do,
I would be. I just keep thinking about butter churns. All I can think about is butter churns. I'm having trouble thinking about a butter box, but I know that you'd call a nice little fat horse a butter box.
Yes, well,
But anyway.
when people learn that I'm talking about trees, then I mention that I've been looking into the butterbox. They say, butterbox, that's a kind of tree then, is it? Well, no, sorry. There is not a butterbox. There is the rose butternut, but the butterbox is actually for transporting butter. And so they were made preferably in the white pine, but then New Zealand was running out of timber by then, and so they limited their white pine exports, and the dairy people wanted to stop them exporting white pine altogether, and which is again more commonly known today as kahikatea, the white pine.
Do you know what I'd like to talk about, Sarah?
Go
And that
on.
is fascinating. I want to talk about how, about hot burns and cold burns. The thing that was sort of on my mind was how Australia actually is covered in weeds. And I think gum trees are weeds, and I hate gum trees.
Ah, yes.
I don't, Oh, you know
Okay.
my mantra.
Okay,
Gum
well,
trees
yes.
are weeds. Gum trees are weeds.
Well, the hoop pine was found to be suitable in Queensland for transporting butter. So
For
then
butter
there was
again.
also, I know, butter was so important. But
It's
anyway, so
incredibly.
then they didn't have to rely on the New Zealand kahikatea anymore. And the hoop pine was the only tree that really did well out of all the Australian natives in plantations.
What's
They
this got
back
to
then.
do with gum trees being weeds and the Aboriginals burning
Ah,
Australia?
yes.
And that's what I wanted.
Yes. Okay, well, you've heard about the mosaic pattern farming or the
Yes,
fire stick
but I've heard
farming.
about it,
Well,
but we have other people listening.
the reason that they call it the mosaic pattern is because every little Aboriginal community group, every different family group would have, like a farm, their own patch. And in that patch, they had to survive on native food, bush tucker, year round. And that meant that they had to have a balance of what they could hunt when there was nothing else and what was in the rainforest where they had rainforest and what was in the gum forest and what was in what they called ecotone between the rainforest and the gum forest. And because it all has a matter of light, in the rainforest there would be less sunlight down at the ground and you'd have a different balance of trees that would do well. In the between that was sometimes burned, you would have the cycads, the burrowongs and so on. And then in the gum forest, or the grassland, you would have the seasonal crops that actually did thrive in what some people have called a fire climax community, which meant in the succession of different plants over time to a balance, if fire is one of the ingredients, then that's what you will get. Whereas in the rainforest, you don't have fire, and the climax community is what you get after all the different stages from the weeds up to the plants that have to feel completely surrounded by other plants before they're safe to grow. So that's pretty much why you had this mosaic, is that it was very much a family group type of system where at a certain time of year they would have to burn so that then the bit in the ecotone would not burn as often and the rainforest would be protected.
Well, the thing is, what is the thing? I'm just trying to grab hold of the conversation for a second here, actually, but people tend to think that Indigenous Australians were more nomadic than they actually were. And that's actually one of the points that you're making there, is that they did very much have their own territories.
Well, they did from what I can understand, there would be groups that were more nomadic and less nomadic because of the availability. If you have, I mean, it's like how many sheep can you put on a piece of land per acre? Well, how far do you have to go to get food if you have a family group this big and a tribal group that you get together every so often?
Yeah.
The Bunyipai in Queensland. They're interesting.
They also, I know you're, I think you're in, I know they also had to burn down, they had to keep a lot of open grassland just to keep the animals around, you know, sort of like looking after your pasture.
Well, the thing with burning is that there's some areas that you would burn at the beginning of the season. And then you can control a fire at the beginning of the season much more easily than in the heat of summer. And so that's what they would do. They would have a pattern, and only certain men in the tribe would actually be burning. But, you know, they wouldn't be burning while they're dressed in a complete plastic protective suit and so on. Maybe it's not plastic.
Not that anyone would actually want to burn in a plastic
suit. Protective suit and boots and everything. I mean, they were barefoot, you know.
Yeah,
And they did it when they knew that the ground would, that the grass would respond best to that fire.
Yeah. Have you done much burning? Because I've burned a lot over the years. I hate burning.
But, no, I haven't had grasslands, and it's more appropriate to grasslands really than anything else.
Yeah. Well, on the farm, on my father's farm, we used to do, you know, and I do a little bit of burning here because carbon is really important for the soil too. But the thing is, with this burning, what happens is the trees that require fire for their germination gradually took over Australia. So beautiful Gondwana land, which was once covered in Australia, was once covered in lots of, or broke off from Gondwana land, but you can correct me and tidy that up a bit, sir. broke off, you know, was once covered, Australia was once covered in rainforest trees and tropical and rainforests. And then the in this part of sort of, you know, more ancient agriculture that the original landholders used, they changed the whole diversity of the country. It's just amazing.
That's one aspect of it, but I think that it's actually quite complex because you've got continental drift happening. You've got the land of Australia being separated from Antarctica, and then there was the sea opened up right around the Southern Ocean, basically, around Antarctica. There was this transpolar current established, which changed the climate. And so you had the trees that had been growing in, I suppose, what they call a Mediterranean-type climate, even down here. Rainforest, even in Western Australia, where today there is none. The climate also changed as the whole pattern of the where the land was against where was the sea on the planet, that was changing. And so you had the Mediterranean climate in some places changing to a monsoon climate, which means that where before you had the cold wind, hot summer, then you have the wet and dry season where the summer is the season, and the trees weren't really geared to that. And so there was a lot of change already happening. And then in walks the Aboriginal people 60,000 years ago or so, maybe longer, but they can pretty much pin it down that they were here then. And they brought fire, and that added to the mix. But it wasn't the only thing.
You're right.
It was also the climate.
Yeah.
And so a few little mistakes with a fire getting out of control, and yes, it all changes. But, you know, basically we can't blame them. We can't think of them as them because we are people, and we have had a few little mistakes that have changed everything.
Oh, I'm not meaning to blame them. I'm just seeing part of how it's sort of...
It's more those people learnt over time that they could control how much of their territory would burn by burning at the right time of year. And now, in certain areas and in some of the national parks, those traditions are being adopted. And so you read about people driving through Queensland and there's this big fire, and they get to the next town and they say, "There's a fire, there's a fire." And the people in the town say, "Yes, it's that time of year, the Aboriginal people are doing a burn." And nobody worries because it's under control. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. Whereas if we get a fire around here, we have a local person who rings us all the time when there's a fire like miles and miles away. Like, it reminds me
Yes.
of that. Like, you're always hearing whenever there's a fire. Oh, Australia's snakes, spiders, and fires. I think that's what we're most famous for these days. Hey, so
Yeah.
did you know that we had a fire here about a kilometre away?
I think I did
Literally
read
one.
some story about that.
And they brought in Elvis, the
Elvis.
great big, the helicopter. I don't think it's
Yeah.
Elvis anymore.
Now, well, this one hasn't really got a middle. Is that the one? So I can carry a fire bag? Yeah, but Elvis had quite a launch.
Did he?
Well, you
He
know, I
did
mean, you
before
can't really imagine Elvis with no comment, can you?
No, Elvis with a paunch. Well, he shouldn't have worn a white suit. I think that was half the problem.
I think he
Because
was
when I look
brilliant.
at him,
Let's not go there, really, because everyone's got an opinion already.
I liked
So,
Elvis, but I just still
good.
think that when I look back on
Yes.
him now, I think Elvis should have worn black that day, not white, when he did that reappearance.
It does mean, because he was so distinctive, that every once in a while you see Elvis still. He hasn't entirely left the building. And I came across him one time in St Kilda, and that was fun. Had a little restaurant where he had everyone dancing. You can be lucky. But getting back to how people have really changed the balance, people went in and cut down all the easy trees, and they left the gum trees there. And then they burnt, because the easy trees were easy because they didn't sprout back like gum trees when the area got burnt. So they burnt and got rid of them so they could make their farms and grow their wool and their butter. And as a result, the burning created the perfect environment for the gum trees to worm their way in. And that's basically why, but it's not as simple as that because they're the forestry people. They say suddenly, "Hey, look, now that we have the chainsaw, now we have so much equipment, we actually want to grow gum trees. They are preferred made paper." And so they go planting gum trees everywhere, including in such quantities in Tasmania of trees that didn't grow there before. They've come from New South Wales, that the leaves are dripping stuff into the water that then goes into the waterways and poisons the fish because it's just, there's no balance.
You need to turn your phone in a different direction, Sarah.
Sorry? Talk
You
louder?
need to reposition your phone.
Okay. Is that better?
I think so. Or is it got a line on the end of it, or is it a walk around the house phone?
I have a line, yes.
Oh,
Is that
okay.
better?
Yeah, no.
I
Oh, I
was
don't
getting
know. Just
carried
keep
away.
talking.
I was
You always
getting
get
carried
carried
away.
away. That's why we get on so well, because I love people who get carried away. I
Yes.
just
So, yeah, so now we have more gum trees to the point that now nature has to step in and try to control the gum trees. So we have things like jarrah, dieback, Phytophthora, which
We've had a
has
massive
been.
dieback in our gums. What's going on in our gum trees around Dalesford at the moment? I've noticed that for the last couple of years we've had these gum trees, they're all dying back. Like the is it Phytophthora?
I'm not sure what it is in Dales, but it might be. There's a lot of different Phytophthoras, and they are all around the world, and basically they are under control in a lot of places. But when things get out of balance and there's not enough biodiversity, they seem to take off.
Well,
And
that's how everything
that's what
fits in.
happened. And now they're attacking the Kauri in New Zealand. So they're putting in signs on all of the trails and so on. And it's to do with if the ground gets disturbed too much, it goes through the root. So the nursery plants that have a constant watering and a constant or fairly constant temperature can quite easily be carriers of Phytophthora. But when they get into a situation where they have a dry season, the Phytophthora won't spread so much, but then the wet comes and they will. Something like that, anyway.
So the
So
Phytophthora is sort of a mold, really.
it's a fungus,
Yeah, it's a
Which
fungus.
in mold
So
is also a
basically,
fungus.
yeah, which is all sorts of healthy things in molds. This is what people forget, how important the molds are in the earth in terms of healthy soil.
Well, exactly. The whole biodiversity has to be in balance. When it isn't, you get something like this dieback that takes over and kills a whole swathe of trees. So in Western Australia, it kills the jarrah and the banksia. But then in some places, the soil adapts, other creatures come along, or organisms, and they reach some kind of balance, some kind of agreement between the species about who's going to survive. And then the banksia that were dying before, they should start to survive it. So it's all a matter of the build-up of the different species reaching some kind of balance once again. And
Yeah, the
look,
emphasis on the word once again, because
well,
everything balance is always changing, isn't it?
yeah, so that's the whole idea of you have the weed community eventually becomes the climax community in the forest. So the
Yeah.
weed community is the gum trees, and they are
Yeah.
necessary if you have a lightning strike in a rainforest and suddenly whole swathes of the forest have been burnt. Then what will come back is there's some big gum tree somewhere sending seeds that will grow easily in the ash, whereas the other plants don't like to grow in the ash. And then the gum trees grow up, and they have this thing where the gum trees, if the leaves are overshadowed, well, they'll just die. They don't like that. So there's always enough light coming through for the other trees to come up under. And that's
Yeah.
how you get that process of gradually it becomes a rainforest. But when you get people come in and they log all the trees and they reseed with only gum trees, well, you haven't got that balance anymore. All you've got is the weed that's supposed to be doing the healing in one little patch becomes the whole body. It's not just like the one scab that eventually will get better. It's like 90% burns.
Yep, I'm just typing in a song. I've chosen Better When We're Together with J back Jack Johnson. Do you realize that we've only got 5 minutes left, Sarah?
And you haven't played
It's
any
so
music.
funny.
We'll put some on. Yes.
No, we'll put
Okay.
it. Oh, I can't even spell Jack Johnson, but we'll play Jack Johnson Better When We're Together. Thanks, Stephen. Stephen's asking which song we want, and I've been trying to type it all over the place. Because I think we're better when we're together, Sarah. I've always enjoyed being with you. It's funny, I fluctuate, but I mean, at school I always called you Sarah, and then when I came to Daylesford and re-met with you, which was quite a coincidence, many what 20 years ago or something now, everybody around here called you Sa.
Yes, look, I was always Sarah at home, and I was always
Oh, you were
Sarah at
Sa.
school, and I
Oh,
kept
well,
them
see.
completely separate.
I
Somehow
know,
we have.
and now the other day you told me I have to call you Sarah again, and you've always been Sarah to me or Sa. So can you merge your two worlds, or is it way too hard?
I'm looking for another name again, that I haven't been successful.
Yes, Sarah is a really funny girl. She's about what? How tall are you? 5 foot 10?
Cool.
95, 9, 11?
Well, they put in metric now.
Oh,
Go on.
I don't do, you're the architect. Nearly always barefoot, aren't you?
Yep.
You are a barefoot creature, which I absolutely love. And
I
I
do have
wish I went.
some steel cap boots for when I'm working.
Good girl.
Yes,
And
you have to.
you do. And she has this hilarious house that she's mosaicked all around the place. Anyway, and so there you are. This is barefoot Sarah, and you just somehow did architecture, and you didn't feel like doing it anymore, and you ended up trying to write a book, and now you're trying to work out how to survive like the rest of us.
Well, if anyone's interested in my book, it's called Stone House Construction. So if you Google that and CSIRO, it'll come up. CSIRO being
CSIRO, the
the
Commonwealth
Commonwealth
Serum.
Scientific Industrial Research Organisation.
Right. Well, when I was a kid, my dad had a friend who worked for that called Thomas Keeble. And this is like, we're going back a very long time, unfortunately, or fortunately. And they were into seeding clouds. That's the only connection. Whenever I think of the CSIRO, I think how they were controlling the weather, 50 years ago.
Yes.
So that's, and now I think of you and your book
Yes,
on
and they were the first ecologists were in places like that too.
the first ecologists were in the CSIRO.
Well, those were the kind of places where when ecology formed itself as a profession, that the CSIRO was one of those places where they could find a job. Yep, and now they publish books as well. And I suppose they
I've
still
been to
get
their
some.
bookshop. I was just saying I've been to their bookshop. I'm just saying boring things, so.
Yes, well, mostly they sell online. I don't actually see my book in the shops very often. But you never know. You never know. There might still be a bit of interest out there. It's only been a couple of years. Might get big.
Might get big. So, have you got a name for your new book?
No, that's really hard.
Oh, you wouldn't tell it anyway.
It's not really about butterboxes. That's just what I've been looking into at the moment. It'll be
Maybe
one
that's what the
sentence.
title could be. Not really about butter boxes.
Yes, well, that depends who publishes it. You know, some people go for the quirky title and some people go for the strictly business. And seeing as how I haven't even compiled the chapters with letter to send off yet, I really will just have to wait and see.
So do you
Because
have a
that's what you have to
routine?
do.
Do you have a routine for your writing?
No, basically, it's just when I get other things out of the way, what I feel like doing, unless I feel like wasting time and indulging myself, in which case I will read for pleasure rather than research. So, yes, but you know, I do get onto it most days, even if not for very long.
Say that again. Your voice broke
Oh,
up.
I get onto either research or maybe the odd sentence that I can compose most days.
Right.
But I haven't been really punching it out the way some people apparently do. You know, some people can do a book a year. That's not me. No. But hopefully when it does come out, I won't feel the need to change things too much.
Oh,
Which I'm
when
pretty
it
happy
comes.
with the stone one. I don't really want to change very much there. I don't think I made too many mistakes.
It's a beautiful book, and I love the foreword to it. And you know, to me, you're a completely rich person, and I've been through so much with you over the years and seen you go through so much. But none of this can we discuss on radio today or maybe ever. But thank you so much for coming on People's Internet Radio tonight with me, Sarah, and this
Yeah,
morning
well,
and
that's
this
been fun.
afternoon. It's been fabulous. So it appears I have to send you maybe you can ring me later because it appears I haven't paid my phone bill. And I tried to ring you this morning and it said the number you have called is not available from this service. So if you want to ring me later, I'll go in and pay the bill
Yeah,
and ring
and you
you
go see if you can find the bill, yes. You can probably pay it online, though.
Oh.
Yeah, but no, you can't ring up, can you, to pay the bill? No.
Oh God, I'm
They're
lucky
not
if
an
I've got any.
emergency service.
Yeah.
Okay,
I
then.
can ring
Well, then,
locally. Well,
thank you and goodbye.
yes, and I'm playing the song. I chose the song better when we're together because Sarah and I have a lot of fun together, particularly at her parties or at her house or even at my house. So thanks for coming. And you can play the song now, Stephen, if you want to. And thank you, Stephen Roberts, for hosting us.
Don't forget, you have to mute.
Okay.